Hello and welcome to the Mr. Brown podcast, where I reflect on my journey as an early career teacher, with a special focus on mental health. I am your host, James Brown. Good morning. So there are several things I'd like to talk to you about today. The first is a moral dilemma. So let me set the scene. It's a computer science lesson with Year 7, and I'm mid-explanation. A student's hand goes up. I say, yes, what is it? And the student says, sir, Finley, made-up name, sir, Finley just put his middle finger up at me. I turn to Finley and say, is that true? He says, no. But I know Finley, and I suspect that it was, in fact, true. So I say to Finley, okay, stay behind at the end of the lesson. He starts to argue, saying, why, I didn't do anything. But I say, we're not talking about it now, we'll discuss it at the end of the lesson. And so he settles down. The end of the lesson comes, I speak to Finley, and I say, Finley, did you swear at Charlie? Another made-up name. Finley, did you swear at Charlie? He says no. He's looking at the floor. I say, Finley, look at me. Did you swear at Charlie? He half looks up, still shakes his head. I ask for a third time and demand that he looks me in the eye. Finley, did you swear at Charlie? And he said, yes, I put my finger up at him, sir. Okay. That's good. Progress, you might say. But now I have on my hands a real dilemma as a teacher. Because swearing at another student during a lesson is certainly an offence that deserves a detention. Yet here I have a student who himself has just made some considerable moral progress by being honest with me. So, if I give him the DT, in the future will he be less likely to be honest with teachers? In which case I shouldn't give him the DT. But if I don't give him the DT, will that make him more likely in the future to swear at students during lessons? What I ended up doing was taking him to the classroom where we usually administer DTs, got him to sit down for a few minutes, and I logged the incident on Sims. I consulted with my colleagues. I then went and had a conversation with the student, with Finley, but I didn't keep him for any more than about 5 minutes. I sent him on his way. This seems like a compromise, but I'm still not sure whether it was the best solution to the problem. So thinking about it now with hindsight, the dilemma is this. He's sworn at a student in the lesson, but he was honest about it. If I give him the DT, he may be less likely to be honest in the future. If I don't give him the DT, he may be more likely to swear at students in the future. Which of those is worse? I think this is the question I should have asked myself. Which of those is worse? Would it be the worse outcome for him to be less likely to be honest in the future, or would it be the worse outcome for him to be more likely to swear at students in lessons? So here we really have the horns of this dilemma. On the one hand, teaching behaviour for learning, because of course we don't want students swearing at one another during lessons. It's poor behaviour, it's disruptive, it's bad for learning. So on the one hand, teaching and learning is going to suffer. On the other hand, though, this student's moral character is going to suffer if he's less likely to be honest in the future. I think that's far more likely to get this student into far more serious sorts of trouble. And so with hindsight, I think I shouldn't have given him the DT. And he only had 5 minutes, so it wasn't much of a DT. So hopefully I didn't cause much damage and make this student less likely to be honest in the future. But if I'm ever in that situation again, and I'm sure I will be, I think I would prefer to reward the honesty by not giving the detention, even if that comes at the cost of the student being more likely to continue swearing at students during lessons. I still think that's more important. I think it's more important to stress that the honesty is what really matters. Because I think I'd prefer to have a student who swears at other students, but who's honest, generally speaking, than a student who didn't swear at other students, but who told lies. But like I said, a real dilemma. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that one. The second thing I'd like to talk about is my top set year nines. I've spoken about them before. They're a very able group. These are the year nines who, for their homework, are reading through the book Fermat/Theorem, and we do a quiz every Friday. And it's great. I love teaching them. But on their most recent unit assessment, they didn't do very well. And so I read them the Riot Act, really. I told them that being in top set was a privilege, not a right, and that you have to earn your position in that set, and that there are students in the set below who are scrambling and fighting tooth and nail to be in their position. All the usual things. My head of department, who's incredibly supportive, I spoke to her about this beforehand, and she said she'd swing by and say a few words too. So that very much gave this telling off more weight, the fact that the head of maths was there. So she came along. She reiterated some of my points, but she also said, put your hands up if you've ever left a maths lesson not understanding something. And quite a lot of hands went up. I'd say maybe 60%, 50 to 60% of hands went up. And that was quite shocking for me as their teacher. But anyway, she said, keep your hand up if you asked, sir, about the thing that you were confused about. So you were confused about something, but did you actually ask for help? And quite a lot of hands went down, but still a few stayed up. So for the hands that stayed up, that suggests that they didn't understand something. They asked me, I explained it again, and they still didn't understand it. So I need to work on my explanations, perhaps. But then more interestingly, I think, were the hands that went down. And my head of department targeted one of those students and said, okay, why didn't you ask? You didn't understand something. Why didn't you ask, sir, for help? And one student, bless him, he said that he worried that the question he wanted to ask was too basic. And he's in a top set. He wouldn't want other people to think he was dumb or that he didn't belong there. And I'd imagine that for students in a top set, that's a very real concern. That concern probably holds lots of them back from asking questions. And so, how do you create an environment where that isn't the case? Where any question, no matter how basic, is welcome and the student won't feel self-conscious to the point of not asking the question? How do you create that environment? Because in this lesson, I've got a few incredibly able students who also ask very deep, very probing, and very philosophical questions about what we're learning. But that goes far above and beyond the Year 9 content. Really, I should be more concerned with those basic questions. How do I encourage students to ask those questions? I have said to my Year 9s that they don't always have to ask their questions in front of the whole class. They have plenty of time during independent work to speak to me on a one-to-one basis. Yet still those hands went down. Still students weren't asking. Maybe they were concerned even that just the people in their immediate vicinity who'd hear their question, if they asked me on a one-to-one basis, even those students might judge them. So this is a really tricky one, and I don't know the answer to the question. It's a very important question, but I don't know the answer. So if you have any advice, I'd love to hear it. So with my top set year nines, perhaps some of my explanations need a bit of work. Maybe I need to slow down a little bit. But I think that's forgivable for me as a first year teacher. Indeed, I'm teaching some subjects that I've never taught before. So I'm sure with time my explanations will improve. And I don't only teach maths, I also teach computer science, and my experience in computer science really gives me hope. In computer science, we teach on rotations. Each rotation, I think, is about 6 weeks long. I'm currently on my third rotation, my third group of Year 7 students, and I've taught each group the same material, mainly stuff about binary. And even though I've only taught these computer science topics 3 times, I have seen a massive improvement in the clarity of my explanation and my ability to preempt misconceptions. So much so that with the most recent rotation, I've got students who are almost completing my explanations for me, which is fantastic. I remember reading, I think it was in John Stuart Mill's autobiography, I think. So John Stuart Mill was a very fun character. He was a brilliant philosopher. He was the main champion of the philosophy known as utilitarianism. But anyway, he was incredibly brilliant and he was homeschooled. And he was so brilliant that he thought, I need to write an account of my education. Because I'm so brilliant, the world needs to know how I was educated. Maybe they can replicate it and create more brilliant people like me. So he wrote this autobiography, which focused especially on his education. But in that, I think I remember him saying, he was talking about how to write well. And he said that you want to write in such a way that the reader gets to your conclusion before you've even made it. So your argument needs to be so clear and methodical that the reader has come to their own conclusion, which happens to be yours. You've kind of led them, you've given them all the pieces in such a way that they've put them together on their own, which is great because then the reader feels almost that they've made a contribution. The reading becomes active. And I think that a really good explanation in a classroom is similar. You give the students just enough so that they can learn the lesson on their own and be active participants in their learning. You don't want to spoon feed them it. You want the learning to be collaborative. And I think that in this regard, my explanations in computer science have really improved. I think in the first rotation, when I was a bit more self-conscious, I just tried to spoon feed them everything. Whereas now my explanations have become more distilled, and I think the students are becoming more active in the learning. We're learning together, which is great. So that gives me hope. So I've had a bit of a reality check with my year nines this week. Top set year nines, some of them aren't getting my explanations. Yet with computer science, I'm on my third rotation teaching the same topic for the third time in a single term. And my explanations and my teaching has really improved. So that gives me hope. A couple of years down the line, when I've taught these maths topics 3 or 4 or 5 times as well, I hope that they've improved to the same degree. The only issue there is that there's a bigger gap in between each time you teach those topics. So maybe progress will be slower, but I'm convinced that there will be progress. So that gives me hope. So my explanations are improving, or at least they seem to be improving, which is good. I'm not so good on the admin side of things. So sometimes I can feel a little overwhelmed as a teacher, as a first-year teacher, which I think is normal. So I try to refocus in on what really matters. And my mentor last year taught me that what really matters are your explanations and making sure the kids feel cared for. So when I'm trying to prioritise my to-do list, those are my 2 criteria. This means that some admin tasks sometimes get overlooked, or on this occasion, I just get something plain wrong. It was Year 10 targeted parents' evening. So it's not a parents' evening for all students in Year 10, but just for some of them. For those students whom we feel a parents' evening could have the greatest benefit. And they come in, the parents, along with the students, and meet the tutor. So beforehand, the tutor will have gathered information from subject teachers, brought it all together, and they'll discuss that information along with reports with the parents. I had 4 meetings, to arrange and conduct. And for one of those meetings, I booked completely the wrong parents. So I was meant to book in student A's parents, a student in my tutor group, and I accidentally booked in the parents of the student who sits next to him in my tutor group, which caused a bit of a panic initially when I realised I was about to discuss student A with student B's parents. But I spoke to my hub, so this is the team that's in charge of year 10, and thankfully they thought it was amusing. And I quickly put together the reports for student B, and thankfully when gathering the information beforehand from subject teachers, I had been gathering the information for student B anyway, so I had lots to talk about. So I just conducted the parents' evening for a student who should never have been there, but I think the parents were very appreciative. We had a good conversation. It certainly wasn't a wasted 15 minutes, but I will have to catch up with the other students' parents at some point, which will be fine. But yeah, so on the admin front, I sometimes do silly things like that. And on this occasion, it manifested in quite a dramatic fashion. But that's okay. I feel that when I become more confident with the things that really matter, so clear explanations and making sure that the students feel cared for, once I become more confident and competent and proficient with those things, it'll free up capacity. And then I can start reading my emails properly. And what about my mental health? So this is a podcast where I like to keep track of my mental health, and I haven't spoken about it for a while. That's because it's been largely very good. I think I have a strong sense of purpose. I feel like I have autonomy and control over my classes. I feel like I'm good at what I do, which is thanks to my colleagues. And speaking of my colleagues, I also feel like I have a sense of belonging. All of these things, I think, have made me very happy and healthy in terms of my mental health. But we are going into Christmas, and I noticed that over half term, my mental health suffered a little bit. So when I'm at school, I seem to be great. When I'm not at school, I'm not so great. So I'm going to monitor my mental health closely over Christmas, and I'll report what I find. And if my mental health does suffer again over the holidays, I'll see if I can figure out exactly why and how this might be preempted in the future. And if I don't speak to you before then, I hope you have a lovely Christmas. So this episode took a couple of hours to produce, which is about average, and I try to produce 2 to 3 episodes a month. If you enjoy the podcast and you think that work is worth at least the price of a coffee once a month, then please consider becoming a patron and making a contribution to help me cover the cost of running this podcast, which currently stand at around £14 a month. Any contribution would be greatly appreciated. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word in person and on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at MrBrownPod or email MrBrownPod@gmail.com. Please subscribe, rate, and review in your directory of choice. Please also consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/MrBrownPod and helping me cover the cost of producing the podcast. Thank you, and talk again soon.